Hello. I have the pleasure of introducing my cousin today, Caitlin Patton. Not only is she brilliant, as you will learn, she is by far one of the most genuine, compassionate, and encouraging people you will ever meet. I'm going to cry. I remember when I was struggling with postpartum anxiety. Life transition, call it what you want. It was hard. 4 months after having my first son, and she asked me, nudged me, pushed me to go on a walk with her, said, come, you know. We went to Balboa. We sat on a bench probably for an hour, and she just listened to me, and I cried, and she just held my hand, and she just encouraged me so much, and she was so patient and understanding. You know, she doesn't have kids, but she could listen to me and be, understanding and compassionate toward me and what I was going through, and I'll never forget that. Oh, jeez. Okay. Anyway, she was like, add any flair you want to my bio. I was like, well, there you go. Anyway, but beside that, she has her doctorate in clinical psychology, which is why she is an amazing resource, because now she works at Grace as the director of women's care and Abide Alternatives. So you have access to her, which she'll talk about. And she has been going to Grace for a very long time with her family. So her Mad Lib is always fight to remember where your identity lies. Remember that rest, this is great, rest isn't a reward, it's fuel. And you're allowed to refuel without justifying it like you're doing something wrong. Never underestimate the power of Shakira on full blast or whatever your guilty listen to is in the car. Don't forget to be grateful. And sometimes you just have to be a little chaotic. All right, please welcome Caitlin.
And I have two screens because I have to have notes and I don't know what I'm doing. So this is like old school. Thanks,
do you
Jenny.
Want a stool or
no, maybe that? When we get to the Q&A.
Okay.
But I did literally go and stop and get coffee because I wanted to put myself in the mindset that I'm like having coffee with you guys versus like talking. So I'm going to put that here as a reminder. Hey. So I am so excited to be here with you all this morning. Do I need to stand here? Oh, okay. Great. I'll do this, yeah. We'll see. I'll probably move around a little bit. But it is so good to see you all this morning. There are so many faces that I, like, love. Lauren Hansen back there was my junior high and high school leader in this room as well. So, well, yeah. I was old, you know, yeah, I got held back, no. So I am going to pray really fast because I need to. So Heavenly Father, thank you for this time and these women. And I just pray that whatever is encouraging would be encouraging. But more so, just like in light of these, of what Michelle said and what Erica said, Lord, that you are faithful and you are good. And I pray that that just is very clear and evident today. So, in Jesus' name, amen. So, I really do need to pray because I knew that I was giving this talk for months. Taryn and I walked this summer in family vacation. I was like, what should I talk about? And she's like, well, anxiety, you're a psychologist. Like, and I was like, great. I specialize in anxiety. It's everywhere. And then I sat down to work on it. And if you've talked to me in the past week, I probably asked you, what should I talk about? I can't. The anxiety is huge. It's a huge topic. And so I got a little bit in the weeds. But before we get into what I will talk to you about, I want to just introduce myself and kind of take this opportunity to say who I am. Because as Taryn said, I just started this role here in August. So I'm Caitlin. This is my family. They go to Grace. I don't have kids, but my dad is like my child sometimes. I love jumping into big bodies of water. Taryn's brother-in-law is in that photo. I was trying to see if I get one with Taryn, but she's not in it. Professionally, I really focus on a lot of chronic pain stuff. But then personally, and I didn't know this when I was specializing in chronic pain, I've been diagnosed with 5 chronic conditions. One of them is genetic, and I live with chronic pain every day. And that means that I have variable disability. So sometimes I can't walk, sometimes I can, sometimes I can't find words, sometimes I can. So I think I spend a lot of time thinking, and I spend a lot of time thinking about what suffering means and pain and what is embodiment, theology of embodiment, all good stuff.
And hard stuff. And then I spent a lot of time being like escapist to be like, ooh, what else is out there and what is good in the world, and tasting and seeing the glory of God. So I daydream about traveling and cocktails and other good stuff. And then if I could be like anything, this is one of my best friend's sons, Caleb. And if I could do anything, I'd be a hippie, like on a commune with my friends, where we all garden together and cook soup and eat and, you know, that. So this is a picture of what that kind of looks like a little bit. My friend Hannah grew these in her garden, which are just gorgeous. So professionally, I wear a couple of hats. So one of them is at Grace. So when Christina left this year, I was truly blessed and fortunate enough to get to step in to caring for our women. My title is Director of Women's Care, which is so grandiose. Really what I get to do is get to know the women of our church and connect them to our larger body, both like personally and communally. So if you think I could tolerate talking to Caitlin for a little bit, you can call me. There's my number and my email. That could be us. You know, I don't have those overalls anymore, but that could be us, and we could have some coffee and chat. My other hat, so after college, I grew up here. After college, I moved to Seattle to get my doctorate in clinical psychology, and I specialized in rehab medicine, which is not like rehabilitation for addiction, but for spinal cord injury and disease course, health psychology, chronic illness. And then within that, I also have a subspecialization of serious mental illness. That's like bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, and psychotic spectrum disorders, and anxiety. So anxiety became a huge part of my work. And currently, I am clinical director of a national therapy practice. And we specialize in something called dysautonomia and POTS. And I put that out there because it's becoming much more prevalent. And if you have a kiddo or someone that you know, I'm seeing some head nods, maybe, I'm happy to be a resource for that. But also, I previously co-owned and co-directed, this is the picture on the right, a pediatric anxiety clinic, specialized in one certain pediatric anxiety disorder. So that is, I don't have kids, but I've worked a lot with kids. And in particular, what my role became is that I really did a lot of parent coaching. And I'm certified in something. And the only reason why I'm saying this is I'm going to use some of it later, and I want to give credit where credit is due. There is a type of therapeutic modality, basically a treatment called supportive parenting for anxious childhood emotions, and it's SPACE for short, so it's not NASA, but it is through Yale, through Dr. Ellie Leibowitz, and the whole focus on it is working with parents and not kids directly to reduce anxiety. So we're going to talk about why that's pretty amazing later and make it relevant to us, hopefully, this morning. And then, Jenny, with time, what time do I need to end? Okay. Oh, yeah. And I want to give like plenty of time for Q&A. Like, really, part of this is anxiety is so broad. So I'm happy to be like a resource. So I wanted to leave as much time as possible. And I'm a fast talker. So hopefully it won't be too much like drinking from a fire hydrant. Is that the, yeah, whatever it is. A few caveats before we dive in. Yes, so I am 30. I'm in my late 30s. And I'm not married. This is my chance to say, if you have any eligible brothers, bachelors in your life that love Jesus, my number is on the screen. so I feel sometimes kind of not like insecure, but definitely like a little bit like people in glass houses, a little bit like throwing stones. And instead of stones or critique or advice, all I have is research articles. So I'm kind of standing here with that, and I'm just aware of that. And then the other thing today, when I use the word anxiety, and this is really important to me because the church hasn't always done the best job with mental health, in my opinion, or the nuance of it. But anxiety is a form of stress response, and stress responses have a whole bucket of things that we put into that clinically and also experientially. So that can be panic, that can be worry, that can be PTSD. It's a whole gamut and spectrum of conditions. And today, because we're going to just be not talking with a ton of nuance, just bear with me as I say anxiety or stress. I'm kind of using them all interchangeably. But they're not, and they are. So anyways. And finally, this other caveat. My role here this morning is not to provide any mental health advice or recommendations. Neither is it at Grace either, really. So I don't provide therapy, but my role here is to just come alongside the women. And really, my goal is to be the body to the body and help us connect one another to the amazing gifts and resources that we have here. So like I said, Taryn and I were walking. We're like, oh, anxiety. Sounds good. So broad. And when I was preparing, I blew a drink. I drew a blank over and over again. And I literally started talking to everyone, asking them what I should talk about. I asked my mom. I asked my therapist. I asked my friends. I asked colleagues. And the one who finally gave me the answer I wanted was my physical therapist, which, again, no kids, but I got the body of a six-year-old who's nursed three children and because of my genetic disorders. And if you have had any postpartum, I call it PVPT, you know you get really close really fast to that physical therapist. And so we're working, and I go, hey, Kristen, I am speaking to a group of women that all just had babies. You know, what would you want them to know? And she said, do Kegels. No, I'm just kidding. That's not what she said. I said, if you could tell them one thing, what it be? And without missing a beat, she said, give themselves grace. They are so hard on themselves. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I am a psychologist researcher, so we're going to go here. But the pressure on parents right now is so immense. So in 2024, the Surgeon General, I don't know if anyone saw this, but released an advisory. And advisories are released when there are national level areas of health concern. And so the advisory is on parental stress. And what they're finding is that 41%, they ask parents, like, what is your stress like? 41% of parents say that they're so stressed they cannot function. And 48% say that the stress feels completely overwhelming. And as a psychologist, I know that when we look at functioning and distress, those are the things that we start to tip into kind of more clinical areas. And that's significantly different than adults who don't have kids. So for adults who don't have kids, those same statistics are 20 and 26%. So it's double, exactly. Nice math. Who did the math over it? Thank you, double, yes. So when we talk about, and they identified what are the things that are really causing parental stress, and these seven are the ones that are named over and over again. So finances, for those of you, 26% increase in childcare over the last 10 years. So that's just one area. Time, parents are working more, but guess what? They're also spending more time with their kids, which sounds awesome and amazing, except for what that time, why is that time being spent more is often out of a sense of obligation. And it means that you're spending less time with spouses. So there's higher rates of burnout. And the expectation on parents to do everything is in clinical language is insane. We're not made to do that. Children's health is a huge area of concern. You know, I'm like looking around. None of this is new. I think these are probably things that resonate. One in five kids right now have a high health need, and that number is only growing. Technology and social media, invite me back. The concerns about children's physical safety, specifically gun violence, is both accidents and school shootings, is one of the highest predictors of parental stress right now. Cultural pressure to meet parenting standards. You guys, please invite me back or just invite me to coffee. But the parental standards, when we think about raising kids, sometimes, you know, we want our children to be successful, which means that we're expecting us to be successful parents. And I would just say, what does successful mean and to what end? And all of this comes with a cost. Parental isolation and loneliness is extremely high right now. And in my work with parents and conversations with friends and women, which I have often, I get the privilege of having often, one of the things I see trickle down from this is just comparison. The constant questions of, am I doing enough? Is this the right food? What school do we send them to? This person doesn't seem to be having a hard time with this, but I'm dying. Am I okay? And then the exhaustion, both the mental, spiritual, physical exhaustion is so high. We've heard a lot more in the last 5 years about mental and emotional burden as women. Women are carried 2 to 3 times the labor, unpaid labor in homes. And we're also starting to see that women carry the mental, emotional load for the family of planning ahead and anticipation so much more than men. And that's not a dig. We're truly, I believe that we are made to be and hold different parts of a family. But women are tasked with so much. Aren't you glad you invited me to speak? This is so fun. So yes, we could easily lean into the doom and gloom. But like I said earlier, I don't think any of this feels new. And when we talk, when I used to talk to parents about certain types of anxiety, they would say, oh, should we let our kids know that they have selective mutism? And I would say, your kids already know they have selective mutism. They might not have the words for it, which is an anxiety disorder. They might not have the words for it, but they know they're anxious. They know that they're having a hard time. And I think that's kind of what I hope these stats bring up, is not a oh, we're all screwed, rather a, yeah, no, it's that hard. It's that hard. So professionally, and I think this is where we see what are the conversations you're having on the playground? What are the solutions that everyone's trying to find? What are the hacks that people are having? What are the things that you say or that you choose not to say in front of your friends who are raising kids at the same time? And they're the body tension that we can't get rid of and kind of the fatigue sometimes. And again, there's so much nuance to this, but this is what we see. So where does this leave us? Professionally, this is the landscape I sit in almost every day. Helping people navigate stress and anxiety. And so this is partly where I kept waffling all over the place. I can give a lot of tips and tricks. We can talk about mindfulness. We can talk about deep breathing. We can talk about gentle parenting. We can talk about, and if it's good or bad, we can talk about, just so many different things. And what kept coming back to me is if I was having coffee with my friends, what would I actually want them to know? What do they actually need to hear? And I kept thinking about, I literally talked about this in counseling last night with my therapist. I kept thinking about how when I work with my patients who I truly feel so privileged that God, and most of them are not Christians, the thing that keeps coming back to me is that the world is a chaotic place. We actually don't have control. And that is one of the hardest things I think we are asked and tasked to work through in the world. But what I get to say here this morning that I don't get to say to my patients is that there is so much grace for you. So there is so much grace for you in parenting. There is so much grace for you as a woman. There is so much acceptance and safety that are available to you. And not just because you're human and because you're wonderful and mama's going to stick together and support one another, but because you are made in the image of God. And because you are made in the image of God and you are his beloved, there is a deep, rich, never-ending well of love and acceptance that you can rest in. And I loved, I just feel like Michelle and Erica, what you guys spoke to this morning, I just was like, yeah, no, this all just goes together. There is a well that is available to you. And I say this really, truly, again, not a mom, but having experienced suffering, having seen my mom, when I was in high school, I had to leave high school because I was so sick and didn't have a diagnosis for a year and a half. Lauren has seen me, and those other people in this room have seen me in that season. And still the grief of what that means for me, still as a family, what that means. These are not words that I say as trite, quick things. These are words that I say and encouragement that I say, having really struggled to understand God's goodness and still struggle to understand his goodness. But also understanding the body that he gave us to have and our nervous system, which we'll talk about in a second, it points to me, it points to the fact that we were made to know that we were safe. And the world is not going to give you that sense of safety. As Michelle was saying, your friends can't give you that sense of safety. And yet knowing that the waters are calm is what God can do. And knowing that the waters are calm is what we can find our hope in. And we hold grief at the same time. So that's, again, another talk I'd love to have. And what I'm saying clearly is not that tips and tricks, they're not even tips and tricks, AKA treatment is not valuable. This is my livelihood and privilege. So that's not what I'm saying, but this is a unique thing that I get to say here this morning. I wrote this and I'm going to read it because I liked it. Tips are absolutely important. This is literally what I do all week long. But what they often don't touch is the deep fear underneath all of our trying, the fear that moves us through our day, the fear of comparison that amplifies until we feel insufficient, wrong, or alone. And that is the exact opposite of what God speaks over us. And there are some verses here that I have just put up there just to reference that. And I don't get to say that to my patients. And this can also include wrestling, so all the caveats. So now we're going to jump into anxiety 101. How many of you work in mental health? Oh, yeah. Okay, cool. I'll take it. Mental health, physical health. I love it, Esther. Yes, you're studying it all. Yes, I love it. So we're going to do a very brief, a very gentle, like, top-level anxiety. So talk. So we're going to shift from, like, the world's on fire to a tiny bit of fear theory. Just a light sprinkle, a tasting flight of psychology. So for those of you who like this, welcome. For those of you who don't, welcome. So at its core, anxiety stress responses are our body's created protection system. It's your body's built-in alarm designed by God for survival. Or evolution, depending on what you think. It's meant to go off when something is genuinely threatening. So like a bear or a car swerving, or if your child goes quiet in the other room, you are cued and created to go, what is going on here? But there's a really tricky part. Our brains love efficiency. And so we are constantly scanning for threat. And when our brain notices or experiences threat, it will remember it more than other information. And it might be, so then what happens is that it has that pattern, it notices it. And when it notices something might be dangerous, like this little woman that ChatGPT created for me, she sees a bear. And then the next time that she's in that forest, maybe a quick movement, a rustling of the trees, she has that same stress response because it could be a bear. So it moves from danger to perceived danger to possibility of danger. And that's where possibility and uncertainty of, or tolerance of uncertainty becomes really crucial to understand. Because your body goes, oh, that thing, that situation, that felt bad, that went bad once, let's avoid that from now on. Thank you, body. And so really when you get down to it, a lot of these core concerns or fears are what if, what about, last time this happened, what if I can't handle that? And really when you get down to the core concerns of most things, it's am I going to be okay and am I going to be safe? Those are the questions that we have as we move through the world. And we're created to have those questions in order to live. And as parents, what can happen is that this can generalize to, is my child going to be okay? Is my child going to be safe? And that is a beautiful, natural strength that God gives us. It also is hard. It is also very hard. And we'll talk in a moment why these two questions are necessary and important and ingrained in us. But before we look at that, I want to talk about two things that are like the basics of what helps reinforce anxiety and why it can grow over time. And again, this can also be stress. So we have this amazing nervous system. We have our somatic nervous system, which is where if you move your arm, that's your somatic nervous system. But then we also have your autonomic nervous system. And the key word in it is auto. So autopilot, it just happens without you thinking about it. And this is what we know colloquially as fight, flight, freeze, and then fawn for all of you millennials out there. It's it's automatic and super fast. It happens in milliseconds. And when your brain perceives threat, your body starts responding before it actually knows what's happening. So that means that your heart rate increases, you get muscle tension, your hands sweat, your thoughts get narrow fast. You might even feel a sense of like depersonalization or if you're like floating on air. And at its highest, that's what we would call a panic attack, right? So there's kind of this spectrum. If you've experienced trauma, this is also what can get ingrained in your body as well. And one of the things I want to be so clear about is that this system is not sinful. This system is how you were created to live and breathe and know God. So when you respond for how you were wired, maybe that doesn't point to failure. Maybe that points to, oh, I need safety and security to be a human being and to live. Scripture affirms this. God created us as embodied beings. If you want to talk about embodiment theology, again, coffee, please call me. But Jesus, we see Jesus have autonomic responses. In Gethsemane, right? He cries out. He sweats tears and blood and, you know, all these. This is actually holy work because it is a reflection of how God has made us to be his creatures. You are not a brain floating in a jar. You are a person with a nervous system. And the theological side note here is that your body is not evidence of any disappointment that God feels for you or poor management per se. Rather, it's evidence of his design. And when things can start going awry, that's evidence of sin in the world and how you can navigate that too. And sometimes it's not evidence of sin and it's just what your body is. Again, nuanced conversation. So your body has this nervous system. It's like your own internal alarm, right? So your brain, your body are working really fast hand in hand and generalizing that stress and anxiety. So this is a lot of words, but what I want to show you is that this is the heavy hitter. This is what I took away from grad school. This is $80,000 here today. No, I'm just kidding. Grad school is way more than that. All right. So this is the anxiety cycle. It comes from cognitive behavioral therapy, but really it's behaviorism, which Taryn was an ABA therapist, so I'm looking at her. So what happens is you have this stimulus, you have the bear, and you go, oh, shoot, that's a bear. Actually, the one time I've seen a bear in less than 10 feet was with Taryn, and this memory just came back at Forest Home. Anyways, so you have that fear stimulus, and it can be perceived or real, right? Then you have this interpretation. The little circle up there is like my caveat to this graphic, which is by Dr. Blair Cook, LPC. I just Googled it. But you have this misinterpretation of threat or an interpretation of threat is how I would change that. Because sometimes threats are really real. And then you have anxiety or some sort of stress response. And then number four is where the reinforcement happens. Our brains don't like distress. We don't like confusion. We don't like discomfort. And so when we are able to move away from that distress, we get relief. And it's at the level of like a drug, right? So if you're anxious or stressed and you get relief from that, it's like taking a hit of a very powerful drug. It's just like the drugs that are in your own brain that is making for itself. But what happens when we remove that, when we get that sense of relief and we go, oh, sweet, I'm not feeling this anymore. What happens is that two things happen really quickly. We don't get a different experience. We don't get the learning of, oh, I was able to navigate that, or wow, my friend came alongside me, or whatever other thing. And the pattern is reinforced where we go, oh, next time I'm going to avoid that as well. And it's not always conscious. It's not like, I'm going to avoid this thing. I'm not going to walk into that room. Sometimes it is. Sometimes it's not. But our brains remember it, and it encodes it, and it says, I'm going to try to avoid that next time. So then you get that hit, you get that relief, and over time that cycle actually grows and develops and can come and become bigger and bigger. And that's where we, and that's really the underpinning of a lot of clinical anxiety conceptualization. But we see this all day in our lives. Maybe it's like not picking up the phone when a certain person calls because you don't want to have that hard conversation. And or just, you know, having one more glass of wine or something like, I'm just going to, well, sleep, I'm never going to bash sleep. Take all the sleep you need. But there's these small ways that we can have avoidance and stress over time. And that temporary piece ends up causing long-term effects in our lives that can shrink our lives, make them smaller, and actually move us away from what we would say are our values and what we want most in life. And the truth is that avoidance keeps you from discovering what is real, which is that you are actually way more capable, that your bravery allows you to live life much more abundantly often, and that when we move towards approach versus avoidance, what we can experience is a breadth and depth of life that avoidance doesn't always permit us to feel. So now we're moving. So that's like anxiety 101 here. Then we're going to move over here to another theory of what our bodies and minds are made to be, and that is attachment theory. And what attachment theory is, it's probably one of my favorite areas of research. Basically, what it says is that humans are made to grow, to explore, to regulate, and to rest when they feel safe with someone who is steady, attuned, responsive, and accessible. And this is true for babies. You see a baby look at you, and you just feel that connection, and they regulate, right? But it's true for kids, for teenagers, for adults, for women in their 30s doing pelvic floor PT, asking life questions like this lady over here. And from the very beginning of life, we learn who we are and how the world works through relationships. So not perfect relationships, good enough ones. So you do not need to be a perfect parent, but you just need to be good enough, which means that your kids know that they are loved, that they are fed, and really, that's a lot, and that they are safe. And so that their nervous system co-regulates with your own. Parents' warmth, voice, shared gaze, and responsiveness all send powerful messages to our brains and to our child's brain. It says, you are safe. I am here. You can handle this. You are not alone. So when kids receive these messages consistently, they explore more. They recover from stress faster. They have better immune systems. And they develop resilience over time. And when they don't receive those cues, you might have heard insecure attachment, even Amy Poehler was talking about it the other day, their world becomes confusing, overwhelming, and unpredictable. And that nervous system encodes that feeling really deeply. So again, it's not about perfect parenting at all or sending the right message every single time. In fact, that will cause its own issues. But it's about repeated messages of safety. So I referenced Space earlier, and that's the book that is, I could talk about Space for a really long time too. But one of the things that it utilizes, it kind of supercharges the effectiveness of the treatment by using this attachment, right? It says, okay, we know that this is how we operate as human beings. Let's use this to reduce down that anxiety. And this is my one of the tips and skills from today is this equation at the top. This is again from Space by Dr. Ellie Leibowitz. So if you take acceptance and validation when your child is feeling stressed out or anxious, you say, acceptance and validation plus confidence equals support. So that goes a little something like this. I see that you're anxious. I know that you can do this. That's the response. Instead of demanding, come on, you can do this, you're fine. Or over-accommodation. I'll do that for you, I know you're scared. Because when we over-accommodate, what that does is it actually doesn't give our child the chance to build that resiliency. We end up putting them accidentally out of love and out of care, hear me, out of love and out of care, we accidentally put that in that loop, where they're getting that fear response taken away and they're not learning how to build those muscles. So this is a huge skill, and we can talk about it more. But that, I would like take a picture of it. This equation is actually something that we need too. So I actually am certified in space, which means I spent a lot of time working with the team at Yale. And one of the things that I noticed is that I started using support statements for myself. And I was like, oh, I need this. Or with my friends, like, okay, I see that you are suffering right now, and I know that we're going to get through this. I know that you will continue. You're not alone, and you can do hard things because you are held. We need those attachment needs do not go away when we become adults. But what it looks like is that we're told that we need them less and that we should operate without that need more. Because especially as parents and especially as moms, because we are often put in a position where your attachment needs become secondary to your child's. And that is understandable. But what happens is that you burn out. And humans are humans. So as much as we want to experience these things, spouses disappoint us. We get tired. Parents get tired. Friends get distracted. Community doesn't know what to say all the time. And churches get it wrong, too. And so we end up with this question mark often of, like, what does it mean for me to deal with this anxiety about my worth, my children, my safety? And even those questions of, am I saying the right thing in parenting? Am I loving my child well enough? Really all that comes back down to those two core questions of, am I safe and am I going to be okay? And this is where, as a psychologist, sometimes I sit, this happened yesterday, yeah, I sit across from someone who goes, the world is so chaotic, I don't think I'm safe. And I go, yeah. We don't know. It's always if we're safe. I was talking to my mom last night. I stopped working at this at 1 a.m. I shouldn't probably say that, but I did. But I was talking to my mom last night. I was on her bed, and I was like, I don't know what to say. And she's like, well, the world's so full of, like, you know, there's so much anxiety. Like, what are the things that you would tell moms that they can, like, that they can do? And I was like, they can't do anything. And that sounds really awful. But there is an aspect of acknowledging that the world is actually out of our control. And we can do all sorts of things like mindfulness and gratitude and grounding and treatment, exposure therapy, to help us regulate those nervous systems. But the thing that I am excited I get to say to you all is that we actually have in Christ something that's not available elsewhere. We have the ultimate attachment figure. So we know that he is with us. He is responsive. He is a safe haven. God gives us confidence, not in the world, but in who he is and who we are in him. He is attuned the same way that you look at your child when he's when they're crying. He looks at you and weeps with you. And there is a secure bond. For those who are in Christ, nothing can shake that bond. Nothing will change it. And so for space, this is my Jesus version. those support statements are, this is hard, and I'm 100% sure you can do this. And God says, I know you feel alone. I've called you by name. You are mine. I see you're scared, and I know you can do this. You can see the themes there. I see you're scared. Take heart. I have overcome the world. And one of the beautiful things about embodiment that, again, I can't help myself, is that Christ actually experienced this and knows what it feels like to be scared and to actually, well, that's a theological question. I do think that Christ experienced anxiety and fear, and he appropriately held those emotions in relationship with God. So anyways, that's another theological conversation. So in that way, God becomes the steadying presence that tells us you are safe and you will be okay, ultimately. And as someone who's experienced a lot of suffering, sometimes that does not feel true. And it means also what is okay might not be, it might be a lot of pain along with the okay, physical, emotional, and psychological. So what does this mean, though, for your anxiety? It means that anxiety does not have the final word. It doesn't have the final word on your motherhood, on your value, on your identity, on your ability to cope, or your story. And it means that anxiety is not a verdict. It is not a failure. It is not a spiritual deficiency. It is not evidence that God is absent. Your anxiety is your nervous system doing exactly what it was supposed to do. And again, caveat, sometimes it can get miswired, and that's when I would go to counseling and work with other people who have wisdom and all of that. But God does not shame you for those experiences, and he meets you there. And in fact, you're created to be dependent on him. Finitude is something that has changed my life. Understanding that we are made to be finite has changed my life. He never tires of talking to you about how you were made to be created. And in fact, he rejoices when you rely on him for your strength. And so a quick picture of how this works, I think about this, and I use this example in space all the time, is that when it's like we're learning to walk, when your kids are learning to walk, imagine your child is getting up, they're learning, they're wobbling, and what do? You don't roll your eyes. You don't say, well, Johnny walked faster last week. If you hadn't had that red dye yesterday, you'd be walking faster. You don't demand perfection. You look at them and you move toward them. You delight in them. You might even get close to them and cradle them around them, right? But what you also don't do is you don't pick up their legs and place them for them, because they have to learn to have those muscles. And so what do we do with this? I'm going to wrap up quickly. Oh, little baby feet. Here are some quick tips to cope with stress. You can find these on Instagram. Deep breathing and grounding, reframing just means putting on a different lens, actively looking for the good, actively deciding to choose to fight against the narratives. This is a Caitlin moment. The narratives that are being sold to you, whispering in your ear through social media or through the new best parenting technique. Working on your own emotion regulation is the biggest gift. I think there should be tax breaks for people who go to therapy because it improves our society. So working on your own emotion regulation, and if we can ask and talk about what that means, maybe working with a therapist. And then the bigger picture, the picture of God being present in all of this, is that you can pair those techniques with his presence. You can practice supportive self-parenting or supportive prayer. And then the last one, again, a huge other conversation that I would love to have, is rejoicing in your finitude, that you are not God, you are not made to be God, and worshiping with a correct understanding of who he is and how that can rightly order the world. And my big soapbox, lament and grief are also worship. So we are not called to just be happy-go-lucky. That's what I got for you all this morning. And then do we just go into Q&A? Cool. Thank you, guys. Yes, Becky?
Can we get access to your slides?
Yes. Yeah. Okay, sounds good. Yeah, happy to. Yeah, of course. Yes, Cassie. Yeah, no, that's so good. So finitude, there is actually a book. And it was the first time that I heard someone talk about finitude in a way that was like, oh, this is actually accessible. It's called You're Only Human by Kelly Kapic, K-A-P-I-C. And he has, I haven't looked at it, but he has a daily devotional that he takes the content of this and he's like, none of us have time to read a book. So here's the devotional and ways to practice it. But finitude... So quick background about like why finitude is important to me is that I didn't know until I finished my fellowship. So I got my doctorate. I was offered my dream job in New Mexico. And then I was diagnosed with my chronic conditions. And those chronic conditions meant that I could not work in a hospital, which is everything I had trained for. And so I kind of the metaphor I use is like if you went to medical school to become a surgeon, and then your hands got crushed. So you can still practice medicine, but in a completely different way and in a completely different avenue. And then because of my chronic conditions, I have brain fog. I have a lot of physical limitations. And so finitude has been something that has been forced upon me and grief and all those things. But what I've learned is that there is so much freedom in just saying, yeah, no, I can't do it all. And there's so a big, and this is why, this is literally why I'm like, I can't say this to my patients, but I wish I could, is that our culture is not a place that is accepts finitude. We are a productive culture. We're an efficient culture. We are a, for better or for worse, a capitalistic culture. I don't know, that's a whole other thing. But we focus on productivity. And so to live in finitude is actually countercultural. And I actually think of it as an act of faith. Because it shows that I can be limited. I have had forced humbling. And if I rest in that, that means that I am doing something that the whole world is telling me not to do. So that means that I say no, or I try to say no more. I often don't, but I try. When I do take a break, or when I do say, like this morning, so I really, really did struggle. I was like, I love these women. I've been thinking about this for so long. I want to do something good. I was up till 1 a.m, and I was like, you're not practicing finitude. Like, you know, like I'm not going to bed. But this morning I got up and I was like, okay, it is what it is. If I get up there and I make a fool of myself, okay. Then that's what God wanted. I'm still accepted. Like literally going to a place of being humbled. And another personal one is, you know that song, it's like, I'm not going to be able to remember it right now. Take my silver and my gold, not a mite would I would hold. Take my intellect and use whatever it is as you would choose. I, because of my health, have literally... have cognitive decline, like that's documented. That now, that whole phrase has a completely different meaning to me. Take my intellect and use, well, I can only be used if I can think straight, right? Talk about a little bit of a change of identity, being in grad school for all this stuff and then coming back. And so learning how to be like, nope, I am still valuable. And then there's just practical things. I think also being in a group of people that supports finitude is so necessary. And finitude just is like our limitations. We are jars of clay. Sabbathing, yeah, absolutely. And Sabbathing on like a daily basis, like rituals of Sabbath, yeah. Yeah.
With a lot of emotions and screams, bites, hits, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
I'm super helpful with the like the space and how you that I try to do that.
Yeah.
But what would be your advice for me and my husband who struggle with that on a daily basis? is
yeah.
very defiant, very strong-willed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I think that what you guys are, first, I'd have compassion for yourselves. The thing that makes me the saddest is I work with moms, a lot of kids with on the autism spectrum. I don't know. I do. And so behaviors and emotion regulation are prominent. And one of the things that just makes me, oh, it frustrates me and makes me so sad is when they go, it shouldn't be this hard. And I'm like, no, it is this hard. And so giving yourself the compassion, if you're like, no, our kiddo is strong, they're emotional, they are willed, you know? Yeah, like reframing it. No, literally, like, okay, and that means that you might need more rest. That one of the things that that's like one little thing from Space. One of the things that Space also talks about is getting a team of supporters around you, because you can't do it alone. Also, developmentally appropriate consequences, rewards. It's huge. I don't know how old your kiddo is. So it's not too early, and yet it's a little early for some of the cognitive pieces to come on board. But I would say that emotion regulation, starting with you, that starts with that self-compassion and the supporters around you. But if you can be regulated, it helps go further. And then also, honestly, like working with, like, there's amazing parenting coaches and behaviorists out there, and like learning some skills. It's so nuanced and like person to person. But like, for instance, like one family I worked with, their kid would like just start running out of the car every time we got somewhere. So we worked for 4 weeks on what are we going to do when they run out of the car, right? But it's not easy, and it's not a one size fits all. But the biggest thing I would say is if you can emotionally regulate and have compassion for yourself when you don't, and know that you won't every single time, that's the place I would encourage everyone today, kind of. Yeah, for sure. I think we are called to model Christ to our kids and to each other. And so saying sorry as a behavior, sure. Saying sorry because we're trying to train them of, hey, I lost my temper, and like, I'm really sorry I did that. What you did was not okay, but how I responded, I don't like how I responded. It's also okay not to say sorry for every single thing. Like, that's the thing too, is that you're not going to respond perfectly every time. And I feel like that's the thing that's put out there, especially on Instagram, is that your response is going to be perfect every time. If you respond perfectly, your child won't run. Not true. Not true. And so just giving yourself the freedom of like, oh my gosh, I am doing the best I can. That's exactly what you're supposed to be doing. You don't have control over your kids. You don't. So, yeah. So if there's like any, yeah, all that. Anything else? Yes, Michelle. Yeah.
Okay, you had a little bubble that said, ask me about misinterpreting
something.
Do you have time for that?
Do I have time for that?
We're cutting into table time. So...
yeah, I'll talk to you another time. I'll get coffee with you. But basically just I kind of hit on it really quickly. What I didn't like about this graphic, and that I think is really true, especially in this time of history, especially this decade, is that like COVID's a real threat. So there are real threats. And so learning how to manage that, your stress response is protective. So learning how to manage it, not to make it go away because you can't, but to have a right understanding. And this is where I think having a relationship with God, where we understand and trust and hope of there is something that I can find hope in this. There's a greater security to me than in this moment, because there is injustice and wrong in the world. And we don't want our kids to experience that. And yet we don't have control over that. So on that happy note, thank you all so much.